Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. This is Kristen Johnston-Largen, and I'm here with the Seminary Explores podcast, and we have a very special guest today, Kristen J. Stempfli, Associate Provost for Learning Assessment and Dean of the Natural Sciences, Mathematics, and Computer Science at Gettysburg College, and a good friend. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Kristen. I'm very glad to be here with you today.
It's great to have you. So, Chris, as we had talked, I told you that we got a Science in the Seminaries grant and that we're going to be sort of living into that grant this year. And so I thought you would be a really great guest to kind of kick off this year. And what I hope is going to be a series of podcasts where we're talking to different sciences and trying to understand why science might be important for seminary students and what are some ways we can sort of helpfully think about it. You're obviously someone who knows a lot about science and about religion. If anybody is listening and doesn't know the Stempfli name, Chris's father, Herm, was president of the seminary and a preaching professor and a wonderful hymn writer. He has many hymns in the Lutheran hymnal and the Catholic hymnal and many other hymnals as well. So it will be great to kind of hear about your experience with your dad, and we can talk a little bit about that and your experience in the classroom. And again, for me, part of, I think, what we're doing here, Chris, is just to make a case in some ways for why seminaries should really be thinking about science in their curriculum and why science and religion are more compatible than people usually think. I think that often we presume this idea that science and religion are either two entirely separate spheres of influence, which two different languages in some way, right, that don't have anything to do with one another, or that they're actually antagonistic, and all people of faith hate science or are antagonistic to science, and all scientists are atheists. And of course, we know neither one of those things are true. So, So why don't we start out by why don't you tell us a little bit kind of about your own experience as you were sort of growing up and thinking about going into science and having some conversations with your dad, and I think you brought something to share with us, too, in that regard.
I did. So, again, thank you for this very kind invitation. I'm glad to be here with you today. So I think I do have probably an interesting background for this podcast because I grew up on the seminary campus, so I was always surrounded by the seminary and what was happening at the seminary from a very young age. And also from a very young age, it was clear that I was going to be a scientist. So this has been a long-standing interest for me. So I grew up experiencing both the church and science simultaneously. So I think you're right that for me there are almost three categories. So many people will say that science and religion are in direct conflict, and I certainly have heard that over the years from colleagues and friends, and certainly examples come quickly to mind, like evolution or Galileo, for example.
Right.
So I think there are a lot
examples
that come quickly to mind, but I wonder if maybe they are exceptions rather than the rule. In another sense, I think many people view science and religion as totally separate entities. So science clearly deals with facts and the scientific method, and religion deals more with values, things that cannot necessarily be proven by the scientific method. So I think others would argue that science and religion are totally different, and they operate in different parts of our world, and there's no need for them to either be in conflict or to interact with one another. But I think there's a third option, and I think because of my unique background growing up here on campus, but also being interested in science from an early age, the third option is that actually science and religion can complement one another in many ways. So, you know, personally, I've heard all three of these arguments, and I've probably experienced all three, but I like that middle ground of science and religion benefiting one another.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, for me, one of the, again, why I'm so pleased that we got this grant and we're going to be talking about this is because I think it's often incumbent, people think it's incumbent upon, like, the scientific community, you know, to be more open and to be more respectful of religious values. But I think it's really incumbent upon religious professionals to know something about science, right? And to sort of take an interest and wrestle with these questions. You know, like you said, I mean, the creation evolution one is the obvious one. And I think that's kind of a flashpoint one. But in actuality, and we can talk about this a little bit later, I mean, that's not an unsolvable dilemma, right? I mean, it's not that sometimes is perceived, but I think that pastors and public ministers should be ready. If a parishioner or, you know, I imagine a college student comes and says, look, I'm for the first time, I've started to think about this differently. You know, what does this mean for my faith? That they're really ready and eager to sort of engage in the conversation and encourage. Yes, this exploration is fine and it's not going to challenge your faith. And in fact, it might kind of strengthen it. And I gather that's how your dad felt when you were thinking about studying science.
It is. And I think it's probably because of my dad and his influence that I personally never felt the conflict between science and religion that many others probably struggle with. So I remember a conversation with my dad about this exact topic, and I remember where we were when we had the conversation. I can't remember exactly when it happened. I think I was probably in early high school, and we were talking about the virgin birth, and it was, you know, I was wrestling with chromosomes. I remember saying to my dad, you know, this just can't be. You know, people have 46 chromosomes, and 23 come from their father, and 23 come from their mother. That's how it works. And I remember his response to that. You know, he took me very seriously, and, you know, his explanation to me was, but Chris, you don't have to read the Bible literally. And then I think that conversation continued with Genesis and the creation narrative. And I said, you know, this is impossible. You know, that the world was created in 6 days. And he said, again, but how do you know how long a day was and that it is, you know, delineated by 24 hours? He said, you know, again, the Bible does not have to be read literally.
Yeah.
And I think it was that insight when I was pretty young that then helped me to reconcile religion and science.
Right. Well, and you raised such a good point, and this is why, I mean, I always think situations like this are such great opportunities for public ministers, right, and parents and, you know, whomever, right? Because it's hard for us. I mean, I can't go back and remember what I thought about the Bible as a child, right? Because I am too steeped in the way I think about it now. But, of course, you imagine if you're taught as a child that this is a really special book and a really important book and it tells you the truth. I'll bet. So at some point, you come up against these issues and you think, well, what kind of truth does it tell? And what kind of book is the Bible? Is it the same thing as my science textbook?
Right.
Is it the same? And so it's this great opportunity to talk even a little more about what the Bible is and the kind of truth that it witnesses to and all of those kind of things. So, you know, your dad was so great to take you seriously, to understand that this is a serious concern for you and not just laugh that off or say, well, no, don't ask that kind of question, but really engage you. And I think that's just fabulous.
It is. And I was very fortunate that I had that opportunity to just have, you know, a conversation like that over the dinner table.
Yeah.
And to go back to your point of why it's important for seminarians to have a basic understanding of science, I think this is why. Because no doubt pastors are going to get questions from children and young adults in their congregations. And I think it helps scientists, or it helps pastors, if they've already thought about the science and how they might respond to these questions that will come from children or young people or their parents who are questioning.
Right.
It helps if they've already learned some of the basic science and have thought about potential answers
right.
to these questions that will surely come
right.
at some
right.
point in their careers.
Right. Because, again, the way your dad framed that for you then was it allowed you to hold on to these truths that you were learning in, mm-hmm. in your classes, but also hold on to the Bible. You know, and I think, again, there's this false dichotomy that's set up, like, well, either you know, you're a person who believes in scientific facts, and it doesn't have to be like that,
right.
you know.
It doesn't
and again,
have to be either or.
Right, right, exactly.
The yeah. both can coexist peacefully together
right.
and actually complement one another.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think it's not only that they don't have to be fighting, mm-hmm. but they actually can really shed helpful light.
Mm-hmm.
And in the hymn that you brought, I think your dad was thinking that way also. So I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yes, so the hymn is Go Forth in Search of Truth. And my dad wrote this hymn for me during my early years as a graduate student.
So sweet.
So he wrote hymns for all of us
yeah.
in the family related to our different interests. And this was written for me right as I was starting my PhD in physiology at the College of Medicine at Penn State University. And specifically, I was studying a condition called respiratory distress syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
It's a condition that affects prematurely born infants. They're born early before their lungs are fully developed, and they're not able yet to produce a substance called surfactant
mm-hmm.
that is essential for life. You can't live without surfactant unless you're helped artificially. So I was beginning this course of study and looking at this particular disease. And our ultimate goal was to figure out a way to create surfactant synthetically to give to these prematurely born infants. But in order to make it synthetically, you first have to clearly understand how it's made in a healthy person. So I was starting on this quest to figure out a pathway, how this substance is made in a healthy person so that it could then be made synthetically to help a prematurely born infant. And my dad wrote this hymn for me that talked both about that process of figuring out how the human body works, but then also using that science for the good of humanity. So I think it's a very good example, actually, of how science and faith can complement one
yeah.
another.
Yeah, isn't that fabulous? And I think, again, what I'm thinking about the pastoral interaction that your father
mm-hmm.
had with you, right? I mean, not only is he interested, clearly, right? He's paying very close attention to these, what I can only imagine were long, complicated descriptions of your work.
Yes.
In a PhD program. And he's paying close attention to these things. And he, as a man of faith, is thinking about what this means for his faith and
right.
his understanding. And he is seeing, I mean, I imagine that this is a gift that God
mm-hmm.
has given you, this ability and to be able to do this kind of work for the sake of life. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, I always think one of my favorite sayings is in John, and Jesus says, it's in John 10, and he says, I came that they might have life and life abundant.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea of abundant life, you know, you think about all the wonderful technologies that science has made possible for us to have life abundantly, and
yes.
you know, for your dad to really see and embrace that,
mm-hmm.
I think is just fabulous. Well, choose one of the, no, choose a verse of the hymn and read it.
Okay, so there are five verses in the hymn, and I think I'll read the third and fourth verses because these relate to what we were just talking about. So unveil the mystery that hides within each cell. The ordered beauty there disclosed, my primal plan will tell. Let knowledge bear the gifts of my great charity to lift the burdens, heal the wounds of all humanity.
Oh, isn't that great? I think we sing this one a lot. I don't think we mentioned the cell verse.
I think that's true. So I know you use this hymn, I guess, at your opening.
Yeah, probably. I bet we do the opening convocation.
And I've heard that you sing four of the five verses. And the verse that's cut out was the verse that was directly related to me about unveiling the mystery that hides within each cell.
I love
and
that.
That's how each cell actually makes surfactant.
Isn't that fabulous?
Yes.
Well, this year we're going to talk to Mark Oldenburg, and maybe we can leave that one in. I think if any year, this would be the year to do that.
I agree.
Well, I want to know if they have found a synthetic surfactant.
Well,
this is like a total aside from the podcast, but I'm just curious.
So I can
now
tell
you mention
you,
this.
When I was in graduate school, the way these premature infants were treated is we actually isolated surfactant from cow lungs. So we used bovine surfactant.
Okay.
And I used to go sometimes to the neonatal nursery. You need to get the surfactant inside the lungs of these premature infants. Remember, these are very, very, very small babies, and you would pour the surfactant down their trachea, and then you needed to coat all surfaces of their lungs, so you'd literally hold them upside down, and then you would roll them to one side, and then roll them to the other.
So did you do this?
I didn't do it.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I just watched. So that process, although it sounds barbaric, is actually the best way to spread.
Well, it doesn't sound barbaric, but yeah, it is. Yeah, but it's
unsophisticated.
Yeah. You gotta roll the baby.
Yes. Yeah. So, and cow surfactant actually works very well. So, there have been attempts to make synthetic surfactant, but what the early synthetic versions were lacking were all the different components that are present in the naturally made surfactant.
Okay.
So, initially, scientists thought that surfactant just consisted of lipids, so that's what the artificial surfactants were, and then it became very clear that there are also proteins that are present in surfactant, and that you actually need those in order for it to work properly. So this is a work in progress.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, and I think again, you know, I think again about the line in scripture, you know, how we're fearfully and wonderfully made, you know, that line. And I think this kind of work, how can you appreciate how fearfully and wonderfully we are made until you do this kind of just amazing exploration and you think about how there are, you know, a million things that could go wrong,
right?
I mean, it's just sort of a miracle that any of us are put together in any kind of coherent sort of way. And but yet the differences are also kind of great. None of us are exactly the same. And then to be able to, you know, what you uncover about the body at this kind of cellular level, and the ramifications that have. I mean, for me, it just feels like all of that redounds to the glory of God.
That's,
you know,
right,
rather than,
yes,
kind of challenging, you
no,
know, and
no, I
but
it,
but it's definitely, I think what I the places that I think science challenges Christians, and I again, I think ultimately this is in a helpful way, but to think about what kind of God, what kind of creation, and what kind of human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have this language of perfection often, you know, and so the world, God created the best possible world, God's the best possible God, we're the best possible, you know, and that's what perfect means.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of, I think, the challenge is, well, what about the role of chance? What about mutation? What about, you know, the you know, faults coming together and creating an earthquake, or what, you know, all that it feels like it somehow challenges God's goodness or God's providence. But so we have to sort of look and think about creation a little differently. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but it's, you know, we're raised with a faith as a child, and then we have to sort of, you know, that gets complexified, right? And I think science can help us sort of move beyond that into something that's richer and more, yeah, richer and fuller somehow.
Yes.
I don't know. We talk, Chris, we've been talking a lot about Atul Gawande, who's an author we both love. He's a doctor and a physician. I think he's at Brigham Young the hospital at Harvard,
yes,
right? And his latest book is Being Mortal, right? And we both love it. We've recommended it to everyone we know. And I think, I mean, it's interesting that you're talking about at birth, but that book, of course, is about death. And it's almost, those are kind of the liminal places where the connections between religion and science sort of come together in challenging ways often.
Absolutely. And I think that's another reason why it's so important for seminarians to have thought about science.
Yeah.
Because not only will they likely have questions from children and young adults in their congregation, mm-hmm. but they certainly are going to be involved in end-of-life decisions and perhaps some beginning-of-life decisions
yeah.
as well.
Right.
And I think this is a really good example of how science and faith both come together in a particular situation for a family.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely true.
You know, we've talked a lot about Atul Gawande's book and end-of-life care, and just because science enables us to do things and keep people alive, the question then becomes, should we always do what science enables us to do?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
And how should we act in those situations? And I think that's where pastors will likely be involved in very difficult conversations that family members are having with physicians and with their pastor about what do you do in some of these incredibly difficult situations.
Right. And I also think this is where religion can help doctors,
sure.
right, scientists, in as they sort of have to think about what their responsibility and their role is and how they can kind of shape conversations. Because I think at those stages, people are so dependent on their physicians, right?
Yes.
I mean, they're really looking to the doctor for some guidance
right.
and for some help and the way that conversation is shaped, I think makes all the difference in the world. And so not even that you have to be a person of faith yourself as a doctor. I mean, I don't think as a pastor I have to be a scientist, but to be conversant, right?
That's right.
With the language
exactly.
and know a little bit to be able to kind of understand and appreciate the emotions and feelings and beliefs that are at play, I think makes such a difference.
Absolutely. And of course, Atul Gawande would suggest that we should not be waiting to have
right.
these conversations
right.
until the end when somebody's in a crisis. But in fact, those conversations should be happening much earlier.
Right.
When the person who will later become the patient is still able to participate
right.
in those conversations with their physicians
right.
and their pastor and
right.
their family members.
Right, exactly.
So that everybody has a shared understanding of how that person would like to live out their life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think this is going to be a great year for us. And I know, you know, several of our faculty are pretty deeply involved and we plan to kind of integrate this in a variety of ways throughout the year. And I think part of it is just to stimulate the conversation, like you were
right.
saying, to get beyond the assumption that I think is a false assumption, right? That no, we don't talk to each other or we don't like each other. But to just to think about, yeah, what even are the issues here and what kind of things should I know? What I don't even know what I don't know, you know, as sometimes as people of faith. And so maybe we'll invite you back. Who knows? Well, we had agreed. It's already time with these. The conversations always go so quickly. But Chris and I had both agreed when we were talking about this that we wanted to give Herm the last word. And I think he would appreciate that as well. So I wonder if you would go ahead and read through the whole hymn for us, Chris.
Of course, I'd be happy to. Go forth in search of truth, nor fear the vast unknown. Since I am source of mind and thought, you will not search alone. Explore the farthest reach of cosmic time and space. All worlds reveal my handiwork, the shadow of my face. Unveil the mystery that hides within each cell. The ordered beauty there disclosed, my primal plan will tell. Let knowledge bear the gifts of my great charity to lift the burdens, heal the wounds of all humanity. In Christ, the Word made flesh, my wisdom I display. Go follow Him, and He will be your life, your truth, your way.
Aw. Well, delight to have you, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Again, this is Kristen Largen here with Kristen Stempley, who is the Associate Provost for Learning Assessment and Dean of the Natural Science, Mathematics, and Computer Science at Gettysburg College. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.